Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th day of May, Anno Domini 2026, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things you do, nothing less, get off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. A security researcher, whose name I won't even pretend to begin to pronounce, has discovered a unique Microsoft Edge behavior. On startup, the browser loads all saved passwords into memory and keeps them in clear text for the entire duration of the session. This happens even if you never visit a site that uses credentials, the researcher said. Edge is the only Chromium-based browser I've tested that behaves this way. This makes it easier for attackers to extract saved passwords by reading process memory. Chrome, for example, only decrypts a password when it is needed and also uses application-bound encryption feature as an added defense against information theft, which locks the keys to an authenticated Chrome process running a system. Therefore, passwords only briefly appear in plain text during an autofill or when users view them. The researcher warned that an attacker with administrative access on a terminal server can access memory of all logged-on user processes. The proof of concept demonstrates that hackers could access user passwords of other users even while Edge is running. The researcher said, I reported this to Microsoft, and the official response was that the behavior is, and I quote, by design, end quote. They have been informed that I would be sharing this as a responsible disclosure so users and organizations can make informed decisions. Please note that exploiting this bug requires administrative privileges on the system, which can already be considered a full compromise. Administrative access can be abused to extract passwords from any browser. Microsoft said browsers access password data in memory to help users sign in quickly and securely. This is an expected feature of the application. We recommend users install the latest security updates and antivirus software to help protect against security threats. Security experts have always advised against using web browsers to store passwords. It's paramount to use multi-factor authentication and, whenever possible, migrate to pass keys as a more secure alternative. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Edge keeps passwords in plain text. And your choices are, of course it does. I'll stop using it, and who uses Edge? So far we've got 30 votes. Who uses Edge is like 90% of them. And it's easy enough to vote. You just head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And once you've done that, you can also, of course, give us a call on this or a lot of other topics just simply by dialing 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415.
Probably makes it easier and faster to retrieve the password if it's unencrypted in plain text in memory.
Well, clearly, Microsoft believes that their system is so slow that they have to do this ahead of time.
Yep. For those Windows 11 Pro machines running on 4 gigs of RAM.
exactly right. But that's the thing that I find oddest, which is that no other version of Chrome does this. So the Chromium base, right, from which Chrome and Vivaldi and Brave and pretty much everything except Firefox is based on, doesn't do this. They had to actively change it in order for this to happen.
Hmm.
And apparently they thought that was a good idea.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, looked good on paper.
Yeah, to somebody.
We can load pages faster by keeping it in plain text.
But it also causes startup to be slower because it's loading all of your passwords into plain text. And it's all of your passwords. So if you've got 200 passwords saved, They're all taking up memory. Oh, in plain text, do you log on to your bank? And have you saved that password in Edge? It's sitting in plain text in your memory.
And I wonder, you know, like my passwords, some of them are pretty long.
Sure. And they're just all taking up memory in your system.
Yeah. So it you know, it must have made sense at a time, but
it was a different, you know, it was a late night party.
Yeah. To a bean counter somewhere, or right to somebody who just got back from a party. You know, it would be really great.
Yeah, you guys can offer so much more. Yeah.
And you're not supposed to restart your computer, so that startup time doesn't matter.
All right, exactly.
Except for every time an update comes out, it has to restart.
Yeah. Steve, before we do that, we should talk about a couple of other quick things. We had a fellow who sent along an article last month, Ken. Sent along an article last week, rather, which was very nice. Thank you, Ken. It was quite an excellent little article. I enjoyed it. Thank you. But he had a question for us. What's the difference between artificial intelligence and an IBM supercomputer? An IBM supercomputer is the hardware that runs artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Most IBM supercomputer, well, the IBM supercomputer, is running Watson, which is their main huge AI system.
And that's doing weather modeling now. It runs the Weather Channel.
Right, yeah. It runs the Weather Channel and a couple of others. So the supercomputer is really the hardware that the AI runs on. And they are currently running Watson.
And the definition of a supercomputer is getting muddled.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. It used to be billions of operations per second, and now it's trillions of teraflops, and
mm-hmm.
now we need petaflops, you know, the next prefix.
Right.
Because
a flop is a floating point
operation
per second.
Yeah. And the first computers, you know, running at a, you know, screaming, you know, 100 megahertz could do one operation per second.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And now we're doing in the trillions of operations per second.
Well, but now you can create clusters of computers.
Sounds
yep.
That, and I saw one that had a half terabyte speed, mm-hmm. half teraflop speed
yep.
made of Raspberry Pis.
Yep. Virginia Tech, like 20 years ago, made one out of PowerMax.
Yep.
When they were first went to multi-core.
Yep.
And there was a lot of complaint on the top 100 supercomputer list. Because they use students to assemble it, and so they didn't include that in the cost. But I always remember the cost of the computers was like $1 million to buy 20,000 computers or however many it was. The building to put it in was $3 million.
Right.
The air conditioning to cool the building was $1 million.
The electricity.
Yeah, and so they built a supercomputer for under $10 million. And most of them are in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
In fact, what is the top?
But you know, sunk cost, I suppose. The building is already there, et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah.
I get that.
And then when they took that array apart, they sold off the computers first to students and then to the public. So you could have a piece of a supercomputer.
You're right. All right. We got more news to talk about, but we'll instead for now go to the phones. And talk to Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm having issues with Bluetooth and sound on my laptop.
Okay. What sort of issues?
Some of the remote devices won't sync up.
How many are you trying to sync?
Just one.
Okay. Yeah, because
basically two, but just one in particular. Sony headphones, the WHM1400X series.
Yeah, because there is a limit on how many connections you can have, which I think is five or six. And headphones
I'm at two at the most.
Well, a headphone might use three or four. You know, left, right,
really?
Left, right, and microphone.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So if you try to have too many connected, that could be an issue. Is it not pairing? Is it disconnecting? Is it not playing? What's the issue?
It pairs. It won't play.
Is there an error message?
No. No, I go into the control panel and I can see the little VU bar for the, you know, content that's playing, indicating that there's sound. And if I click to my hardwired speakers, I get sound.
Okay.
Is there a volume knob on the headset themselves?
No. It works on a fresh start of the computer. If I have the issue, what I've been doing to fix it is either restarting or shut down and restart.
So, all right. When to enter pairing mode, you hold the power button for about 7 seconds until the voice prompt says pairing or the light blinks blue.
I turn it on, and because I've registered this device before, it's in my inventory of Bluetooth devices, and I click connect, or it automatically connects, and it shows the battery status of the headphones, everything.
And then it works for a while and then stops?
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, I missed that part. Does it works for a while and then stops, or what?
No. If I've been on a computer for a while and listening to different things, it doesn't work. Now, I've got like a JBL Flip 5 that's also Bluetooth. No issues.
Right. But again, Mark, when you say it doesn't work, it works for a while and then...
I don't hear any sound out of the headphones.
Okay. Ever, or it works for a while and then stops working?
It works for a while and then it stops working.
Okay, thank you. All right. So what it sounds like is it's disconnecting. It could, but your other Bluetooth thing never has the same problem.
Correct.
Maybe try removing all the other Bluetooth devices and use just the Sony temporarily and see how that
keeps. Yeah, you can always repair the other device.
Yeah.
Sure, I could do that. Does also that I've got 3 other slots for hardwired speakers. Does that affect?
So if you've got multiple speakers on the system.
Well, there's a pair of speakers in the laptop. There's a pair of speakers in the external monitor. And then I've got another pair of bookend speakers that are attached through the, the Thunderbolt docking
monitor. Oh, yeah, yeah. But none of those go on when the headphones go off.
Correct.
So it's not switching to them.
No.
Yeah, I would start with what Steve suggested. I would forget everything in your computer, in the laptop.
All the Bluetooth.
Forget all speakers. The Bluetooth devices. And okay. Then repair just the Sonys and see what happens. That's where I would start with my troubleshooting.
I'm also seeing check for firmware updates. For the Sony.
The device manager and check for, is all the drivers are current?
No, the firmware in the headphones themselves.
Oh, well. I bought them about a year ago.
So there may be an update already for it if it's been a year.
Okay.
So it says to use the Sony Sound Connect app.
Got that on my Android.
Yeah, there's a check for firmware updates.
So try that, too.
Okay, fair enough.
And let us know.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
It's always annoying when everything is set up right, but it still doesn't work.
Oh, that is the single most annoying thing. When suddenly you have to troubleshoot stuff that just shouldn't ever be a problem, ever. Okay, one of the things that... let's see. We've got some guy named Dave who asked us a question. he got a notice from Google Photos that said the option to back up photos and videos to Google Photos using Google Drive for desktop is being discontinued. So you cannot automatically back up photos and videos from your computer using Google Drive for desktop. Now, that's not Google. Google Photos will still back up your phone.
Mm-hmm.
That's automatic.
Right.
Just and you can computer. Still drag and drop to the browser app. You just don't have that automatic, every picture on your desktop is automatically uploaded to Google Photos. That's the part that's now missing. And that actually goes away on August 10th. So, you can still back them up to Google Drive itself by creating a new folder called Backup Folders on your Photos app. But the automatic backup itself is ending. So if you've been planning on your photo backup being Google Drive, it still can be. You just have an extra step now if you have to upload everything yourself.
Yeah. And for most part, I think most folks are using their phones as 95% of them, and they automatically will still go there, and they're safe. But if you're, say, taking a photo, putting it on your desktop, and doing some, whatever.
Editing or whatever.
Yeah, editing, cutting out somebody or that type of stuff, and you've modified it, that you're going to have to physically go in there and add it to a backup photo.
Yep, yep. So that's an important thing to note. You've got, again, it's not going to go away.
Just change
it. Your photos will be there, and you'll be able to save things to your photo directory, but it won't happen automatically. And as far as I know, Google Photos for desktop is only a Windows program.
Mm-hmm. They used to have a Mac version, but I think
they did away with it.
Didn't discontinue that already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's just the Windows program. So just be aware of that as Dave said, most people, unless you're a professional photographer or Steve Ray, you're taking all of your pictures on your phone anyway, and those will still sync to Google Photos.
Okay, hold on.
So that's a different thing.
Which reminds me of something I was going to talk to you before the show. I have a Google Drive folder full of airshow flyers with the date and the name of the club in the file name.
Sure.
I want a way to automatically add those to my calendar without having to do them one at a time. My Google Calendar. So I'm thinking, because the date and name is in the file name, so there should be a way to read. It's probably a Python script or something.
I was about to say, the only way I can think of to do it is write a Python script.
Yeah.
But that would work. It's Mark from Greece again.
So first I have to learn Python.
This is what you handed me.
Yeah, it's a different Mark.
It's a different Mark from Greece. Same Greece, different Mark. Mark. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Yeah, this is the other Mark.
The other one. I didn't know there were two.
Put that in the caller list. Other Mark from Greece.
Yeah.
I like to refer myself to the original Mark from Greece.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Mark one.
I remember back a couple weeks ago, people were getting confused on how to burn an ISO to a flash drive and get it to work and get the system to boot from it and all that. And I found the easiest way to do something like that is not even burning it or putting it to a flash drive. It's just mounting it. And if you have a Windows machine, obviously, right. mounting the ISO in the operating system, and then you can boot from it there.
Yes, if that's what you're looking to do, yes. But if you're looking to put it on a flash drive to move it to another machine,
right?
That's different, right? Right, right. And then you use something like Balina Etcher or Rufus or one of those.
Oh, Rufus.
We still call that burning the ISO.
Right.
Which harkens back to CDs, where we used a laser to literally burn the data to the disk.
I remember going to various computer stores back when we had computer stores everywhere. And, getting boxes, stacks, towers of CDs to burn stuff for people. And now it's just, thumb drives off Amazon.
So. We used to have...
Isn't it kind of the same thing? You're still kind of burning it to the...
Yeah, technically flat. You actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're burning through the resistive layer to store a charge in a cell.
Right, exactly right, yeah. That's a good point, though. Mark. You can, under Windows, double-click on an ISO file and mount it. Or I think you right-click and then select mount, I think.
Yeah.
I've actually got a Windows machine here. I could do that. You can do that. So depending on what that ISO is. So, for example, if you have gotten... an ISO, by the way, is the thing we used to burn to CDs so that you could boot from them.
It's a disk image.
Right.
Back when disks started to... become not common anymore.
Right.
Instead of getting a physical disc, you would download an image over the internet.
Right.
And then need to put it on a disc.
But so that would you're absolutely right, Mark. That would work. Thanks.
No problem.
All right. Have fun, other Mark.
You too.
Original Mark.
Mark.
He sounds like a restaurant.
Mark the original, one.
Mark one.
Yep. I like the Mark 7 better.
Who doesn't? Steve alluded to a Windows machine with 4 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of storage. And the reason he did that is because I bought myself a toy. I admit it. I bought myself a toy. I got a tooth pulled last week and decided I deserved a toy.
Like, I have obsessions with tabs. In my Chrome?
Yeah.
You have an obsession with laptops.
Well, I assumed it was Woot.
Oh, no. This was Amazon.
Yeah.
It's the Arrows
tab.
No, it is the Fujitsu Stylistic Q5010.
It says Arrows tab on the back of it.
I know. I don't know why. It says a lot of things on the back of it. It's a 2-in-1. So it's a 10-inch tablet with a keyboard. It runs Windows 11 Pro. It comes with 4 gig of RAM. And 64 gig of storage. And it's a refurb on Amazon for, are you sitting down? $69.
No.
And I thought, I got to at least try it.
No longer can deliver by Mother's Day, though.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, in case folks have forgotten, so tomorrow is Mother's Day. If you haven't gotten something for that significant other person that takes care of your kids and takes care of you, you better go out there now and get something special for the young lady. If you still want to sleep with both eyes closed.
Exactly right.
It has a Japanese keyboard.
Yeah, it does. Look.
With all the little, the kanji characters on it.
Yep. And some keys that I don't know what the heck they do, nor does Google Translate. The worst part was I went into the BIOS and it was in Japanese.
Ah.
Luckily, I know which tab and where the
language
changes.
Yeah.
So that was not as big a problem as it could have been.
To switch it to English.
But it's a little, it gives about 4 hours of battery life on a charge. It's a refurb, so the battery's really only at about 80%. But it really works. It works quite well, and I'm pretty pleased with it. I can't deny that it was
to add another one to your collection.
Right. It was a fun little toy to purchase. I might put Linux on it. Or I might leave Windows on it.
I'd say leave Windows on that and put Linux on the other machine that we were talking about before.
Right. I do have one laptop, also not a high-end machine at all, that has Windows on it so that I can answer Ask Nick computer questions by looking things up because I don't answer questions I haven't tried out myself. But I could do that on this. It'll be slower, but I don't care. And then I would have another Linux laptop, which would be lovely. But in general, it's touch screen and all of that because it's a tablet. And there's a spot for a stylus, which I did not buy. I think that's like half the price of the laptop. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody get up.
Get down. Get up. Get funky. Take a shower. Okay, we're back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And I will read the Microsoft news. Microsoft Defender triggered widespread false positive alerts after a faulty security update caught caused it to flag two legitimate DigiCert root certificates as malicious, potentially disrupting SSL or TLS validation and code signing operations across enterprise environments worldwide. On affected systems, Microsoft Defender automatically quarantined the flagged certificate entries as part of its standard remediation workflow, effectively removing them from the Windows Trust Store. This created a serious downstream risk. Without these root certificates in place, systems could fail to validate SSL TLS connections for websites and break code signing verification for legitimate software, a scenario that could cascade into service disruptions, browser warnings, and application failures across enterprise networks. Microsoft acknowledged the issue, which was big of them, and moved swiftly to roll out corrective definition updates with version 0.430, cited as a key fix that began restoring the quarantine certificates on affected machines. So if you, in fact, I just did that on my brand new Windows 11 Pro laptop. Two-in-one. It's a two-in-one. Microsoft has confirmed that the April 2026 security updates are causing failures in some third-party backup applications. This issue affects software using VSS, or Volume Shadow Copy Service, snapshots and causing failure to due to a VSS service timeout. This includes, but is not limited to, products from Macrium, Acronis, Backup, and NinjaOne Backup running on Windows 11, Windows Server, and Windows 10 devices. Microsoft also advised those affected by this issue to update to a newer version of their app that uses newer drivers. Microsoft is effectively saying, we broke it, they'll have to fix it. So check your backups today. You may not be as backed up as you think you are. Microsoft has disclosed details of a large-scale credential theft campaign that has leveraged a combination of code-of-conduct-themed lures and legitimate email services to direct users to attacker-controlled domains and steal authentication tokens. The multi-stage campaign, observed between April 14th and 16th of this year, targeted more than 35,000 users across 13,000 organizations in 26 countries, with 92% of the targets located in the U.S., Because the message contained accusations and repeated time-bound action prompts, the campaign created a sense of urgency and pressure to act. To be clear, and refreshingly, this problem isn't caused by Microsoft. They're only alerting people to it. You may have noticed that Microsoft stock on the NASDAQ slipped a bit this week. The main reason for that is the revelation that Windows 11 is actually still running on code that originally was written back in the 1990s, when your children were babies, which we've been telling people for years. There's still legacy code from Windows NT in Windows 11.
But that's the new technology.
Right, exactly. The main reason for that is some of the code is actually so fundamental that it's simply been in use for that long. For example, Windows 11 still uses the Win32 API from Windows 95 to handle functions like right-clicking. That really hasn't changed since the mid-90s, so continuing to use that code is not so outlandish. Similarly, a bit of iOS and Linux haven't changed in decades because there's no reason to, just like there's no reason not to give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0444. 15. Yeah, there's, you know, people, oh, legacy code. Well, legacy code can be very bad if it's seriously old, unsecured, bad legacy code. But just because it's legacy code doesn't mean it's bad code. So as it says in there, the code that lets you right-click, there really hasn't been any reason to change that since it first came out in the 90s. So they just move the code over to every new system. Similarly, there are utility programs in Linux that were written in the 60s that simply have not needed to change and are still the same code that was written back then. That's not necessarily bad.
And that's why we'll still need COBOL and Pascal programmers.
Exactly right. I've said this for decades. If you always want a job in computing, learn COBOL. That has yet to go out of style. So yeah, you would find that very useful in certain cases. That isn't to say you shouldn't also learn, you know, newer languages and other things, but you know, if you want something you can always fall back on, every bank in the world is hiring COBOL programmers and Fortran programmers for that matter.
I still get a kick out of when I was in programming class, we spent a week looking at C. A future generation language that might be used someday.
Maybe. This newfangled thing. Yeah. Who are these Kernighan and Ritchie upstarts?
Yeah, C is come and gone.
That's exactly right. COBOL will always be with us as long as there is. And there's your legacy code.
Yeah.
There are programs that, for example, when you get money from someone else and they are at a different bank, it gets translated to a universal language, sent over to the new to your bank, and then translated into their language. That translation software and the transmission software were probably written COBOL 40 years ago.
Yep.
But there's no reason to change them because they still work exactly as intended. And it's easier and cheaper. Remember, every device you use was created by the lowest bidder. Every device you use. And so, if there's no reason to change it, if it ain't broke, nobody's going to pay to fix it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rick from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Rick?
Hi. I like to, I read the Wall Street Journal online. Many articles have a comment section.
Yes.
Lately, I've been unable to get the comments. When I click on the comments button, it says there's a problem with the comments section. And doing some research, what I've done is I have a Chromebook. As I said, I've cleared all the three items in cache. And when I do that and go back, I can read the comments. It restores the comments. But it only restores it one time. And if I move to a different article and try again, again it's broken.
One of the problems with the Wall Street Journal is they are very aggressive about showing you ads. And so if you have an ad blocker of any sort, for example, uBlock Origin or one of those, the comments are blocked.
And sometimes your privacy settings and your tracking cookie blocking.
Right, yeah. Right.
So turn off all your safety.
But basically, Wall Street Journal wants to track you, and if you don't let them, they punish you.
For years I've been able to use AdBlock Plus and had no problems.
Yep, they've changed. This is a newish policy.
It's a lot of times it's cat and mouse. They'll change the policy. The ad blockers will figure out a way around it, right. And then they'll change the policy again.
Right.
So you may just have to whitelist it.
On my Google forum, and somebody mentioned something about the cookies being the problem.
If you wipe out your cookies regularly, that will also cause an issue. But
it can sometimes clear the issue because now there's no cookie cookie being blocked.
Right, but
clearly clearing the cookies solves the issue.
Right.
For one time.
So it's probably one of the your ad block program is trying to block a tracking cookie.
Right.
Which then stops Wall Street Journal from working.
And Wall Street Journal says, no tracking, no comments.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of weird that they would... a lot of sites will say, with ad block, we're not going to show you the page at all. But I can read the page, I can read the article, no problem. It's just the comment section that is blocked.
It right. may depend on which comment software they're using. A lot of places have started using Discus. And so there might be more software beyond Wall Street Journal where the problem is coming from.
It may not be coming from Wall Street Journal.
I don't think they're using Discus.
Whatever.
The thing I wanted to say is when I go in incognito window, there's no problem. I can see the comments.
Right, because there's no cookie being set.
Yeah.
So somebody is setting a cookie that says this guy's not doing something we want him to do, and so we're going to block the comments.
So essentially, you're saying there's nothing I can do because it's
you can whitelist in your ad blocker software. You can whitelist the Wall Street Journal,
yeah,
and that okay. should fix it. And then clear the cookies one more time.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I will give that a try.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Yeah. Yeah. A lot. The reality is, again, and I don't know how often I need to say this, we are the product. Anytime you can get something for free, you are the product. So, except kind of for Linux,
yeah.
I suppose. But the fact is, if you go to a website and they let you read it for free, they want you to see the ads. Some places don't care if you block the ads. Some places will show you a giant thing that says, we see you're blocking the ads. Please watch the ads.
And then the ad blocker will figure out a way to get around that.
Right.
Until the website changes their code again. And you know.
Right. But you can with some websites, you can then say, I don't want to see the ads anyway, and they'll let you watch it anyway. But some of them will aggressively block you if you are not showing ads. You're not allowing ads.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to whitelist them so that you will see the ads on their site. I just don't go to those sites anymore.
I remember looking at, the local newspaper has a face price. What is it, a dollar now? It's how long since I bought the physical newspaper.
I'm sure it's more than that.
We asked them once, what would the paper cost if you didn't take advertising? And so we couldn't afford to print it.
Exactly right.
It would just cost way too much. So now what we're seeing, a lot of the columnists in many newspapers have their own blog or their own newsletter.
Right.
For $10 a month or
right.
something.
Right. Right. Because, you know, people...
Because they're not getting paid as much as they need to be from the newspapers.
Right.
Everything has gone freelance because papers are, businesses in general trying to cut costs, so there's more freelance stuff. In fact, there was a law in California that got passed a couple years ago. The intent was to protect gig workers... which it became called, where you do this job for this guy, this job for that guy. But the side effect was a lot of people just left California. So the law was basically that if somebody is providing work for you, you know, writing articles for your newsletter, you have to pay them a full-time salary and give them insurance. So it was supposed to protect people.
Right.
But turned out, and a lot of people don't want to have a full-time job. They like doing gig work.
Yes.
Work when you need to and, mm-hmm. and
don't when you don't.
When you don't, yeah.
Yep.
So a lot of the podcasts I listened to that came out of California, most of their people just moved out of state.
Right. My newsletter. Mm-hmm. It's only $25 a year, but I got to charge something to put it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a year, too. A lot of these bigger ones are a month.
I know. I should be charging by the month. What is wrong with me? I would probably have fewer people signing up.
Yeah. Well, and then something
at AskNick.com.
Yeah, something like the Wall Street Journal, which is designed to give you the news to make you money on Wall Street. they kind of expect you to pay for that.
Well, and they've got a little bit more of a case for it too.
Yeah.
Okay, Rick.
If you're reading the Wall Street Journal, the reality is that you're probably somebody who's got a little bit of discretionary income.
Yeah. For a long time,
that's their assumption anyway.
Yeah. For a long time, we would subscribe to the digital newspaper to read it online, but we didn't want the physical paper, you know, clogging up the recycle bin. But there was no way to get the digital subscription without having a physical paper too, because part of advertising sales is we distribute a million copies of this physical piece of paper.
Right, right. And now it's all about hits.
Yeah.
How many hits you get. All right, back to the phones. It's Rick. Rick is back.
I have a few more things to say.
Oh, sorry.
First of all, so I do pay Wall Street Journal to subscribe to their online version, and when I read their articles, interspersed with the text, I see the advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the comments, and when I use my phone, which is Chrome OS, I'm able to see the comments on my phone. It's just on the Chromebook. It seems weird that they would say, oh, we'll show you advertisements, we'll take your money, we'll let you read the article, but we just won't let you read the comment section. It doesn't make sense.
Steve said, it is very possible that they are buying their comment software from someone else who has their own separate ad system.
And something in your computer is stopping the ads from showing. The comments.
So what ad blocking software do you use? Section. I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. Please continue.
Yeah. There are no ads in the comments section.
What software are you using for ad blocking on your phone?
I'm not using ad blocking on
And that's your phone. Answer. It's the ad blocker on your Chromebook that is stopping the ads from being seen.
The
As
comments.
To why they do that, I don't know.
Ad blockers do more than just block ads. They try to often try to block tracking cookies. They try to block blank pixels that help track you too. And so something that ad blocker is doing is interfering with the comments on that website.
So whitelist AdBlock Plus, which is what I use, can I specify that I don't want it to block cookies?
Well, what you want to do is whitelist the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And which ad blocker did you say you're using?
AdBlock Plus.
AdBlock Plus.
Premium.
Okay.
Okay, AdBlock Plus calls it an allow list. Other ad blockers call it a whitelist. Those are good websites that are allowed to run without anything blocked.
Okay. So you go into settings, and there's an allowed list website, or you can just toggle off block ads on this page directly.
I'll find it. One other thing I want to say is, so I called Wall Street Journal and asked for technical support. Was put on the first level, talked with him. He said, I'm going to send you up to the second level. Talked with him, and then he went away for a while, and then he came back and said, yes, we're aware of the problem, and we're working on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll do what you said. It'll probably work. And if it doesn't, I'll let you know.
All right. Thanks.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Yeah. And as Steve said, the reality is that everybody's trying to make some money somewhere.
Yeah, it is what it is.
And Steve talked about with blank pixels. There is a way, if you have a picture on your website, if I have a picture on my website and you look at that picture, even just by loading the page, then I get an entry in my log that says this picture was downloaded to this IP address. That's all I see is the IP address. That picture could be one little tiny white pixel or a transparent pixel.
Mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. that you couldn't see on your screen.
Right, but that I can track to see how many people looked at that thing.
And because the advertising industry has sort of consolidated to one or two giant players, that you go to this website and they get your IP address. You go to a different website. Oh, hey, that's the same IP address. I bet this is the same person.
Right. Right.
Even, you know, even if you have multiple people behind in your house, you all have the same IP address. It basically goes to your house.
Right. And, you know, people pay advertising depending on how many people visit your site. So keeping track of who's visiting is actually fairly important. So I have one website that gets 300 hits a day. I've got another one that gets 50 hits a day. I've got another one that gets about 2,000 hits a day. All of those are well below the threshold that somebody would pay for ads for.
Yeah.
But the idea is I can track that. I generally don't accept as that cumulative number, just so I know, A, that my site is still up, and B, that it what's on it is stuff people actually want to look at. But generally speaking, if I were the Wall Street Journal or Apple or Google or whoever, I would want to look at that number and analyze it down to the hair to see who's coming to my website, what they're looking at, how long they stay on any one particular page, et cetera, et cetera. What browsers they're using, what operating systems they're using. You can look at mm-hmm. all of that stuff, and all of it is useful when you're going to an advertiser and saying, hey, 85% of my traffic is from Macintoshes, Apple, so why don't you mm-hmm. advertise on Mac? Now, Apple doesn't care. Yeah. They're not going to do it. But you see what I'm saying? Or I could say, 70% of my ads come from Connecticut. So, Connecticut Chamber of Commerce, wouldn't you love to put an ad, 10,000 people a day are going to see this.
And on the other side of the coin, web hosting services charge you by how many connections you get.
Right.
So, you have your own small website, you might get, as Nick was saying, 300 hits a day. A popular website could get 1 million hits a day.
Right, and they're going to pay more.
And they're going to pay a whole lot more for their bandwidth.
And the hosting costs, the amount of space you use, the amount of bandwidth you use, all of that stuff. That's why the Soundbites website costs me a lot of money a year.
It used to be
got all those archives up there.
It used to be called Slashdotting. When you got a big article on Slashdot and 1,000 people went to your page, now it's Reddit. You've been Reddited. Somebody on Reddit had posted a link to your page, and suddenly your hosting services have quintupled, octupled, non-upled.
Yep. So I got on this one website, I had 103,919 visits yesterday from 17,388 different people.
100,000 a day is pretty good.
That's not bad at all, actually. Yeah. That's not bad at all. I should be putting ads on that website.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And so, as I said, it's the cat and mouse game. The ad blockers try to block the ads. The advertising industry tries to get around ad blockers. So then the ad blocker updates to get around the new blocked block. So there's a block. There's an ad block blocker.
Right. And it just becomes a game of leapfrog, and we're stuck in the middle of it. All right, that music tells us we are done with the first hour, but do not despair. Put down that knife. There's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright. A whole nother hour of Steve Ray. And a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco. And a whole nother hour of you. But only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. And we are, like I said, we're going to take a break. So, listen to what's going on while we're on break. But stay tuned, because we're going to come back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And again, we're waiting for the phone. I will just simply say again, while we did not make our goal in this last pledge drive, I want to thank everybody who was kind and generous enough to donate. We really very much appreciate each and every one of you. It is it warms the cockles of our hearts to know that you've done that to us. Not sure what that is, but it warmed it. I don't have enough room with this thing in the way. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bruce from Fairport, New York. What's up, Bruce?
Well, I installed Linux in a new laptop, and I seem to have a problem getting the application of the desktop switcher.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you, and I'm sure it's me, but I apologize.
Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm not.
There's a lot of echo, yeah.
Yeah.
Is this Linux Mint, you said?
Yes.
And what's the problem?
In the app, it's an applet that I wanted to use, but it's got a lock on it.
An app has a lock on it.
Applet.
Yeah, he's trying to install an applet, but it's got a lock on it.
So when you double-click on it, nothing happens?
No, nothing at all.
What are you trying to install it from? Is it something you downloaded from the web, or you found it in the App Store?
It was in the system. I went down to the menu at the bottom.
Yeah.
Up to applets. And it's there in that part in the list that's installed, but there's a lock on it.
And what is the applet?
Desktop switcher.
Do you have multiple desktops installed? Maybe it doesn't let you do it until you have other desktops.
I can do it manually using the keyboard, and it'll switch. But I just wanted to see which one I was on. You know, constantly going back and forth.
Okay, if you go into your system settings, there is a section there for applets. Make sure that it's enabled in there. It may simply be not enabled.
I'll go look right now.
That's the first place that I would check. Did it ever work?
I'm sorry?
Did it ever work?
No, right at the very beginning. So I'm going in for system settings.
Huh. The other... Okay, go ahead.
I'm looking at system settings now. Apps. This is the same thing that comes up. If I scroll all the way down.
You have to find it and see that it's enabled.
Yeah, I scrolled that all the way down in system settings, which is workplace switches.
Okay, you want to be in system settings, and then inside that, applets.
I did that, and this is what comes up. It's got a lock on it.
And if there's no way to enable it, does it say it's disabled?
No, I double-click on it, nothing.
No. No. In the system settings, in the list of applets, you should see it, and next to it should be a little switch that lets you lock or enable it or disable it.
No, not there.
All right, so try this. If you right-click the bottom panel where that applet is,
yeah,
you should get a pop-up menu.
I don't.
You do. If you right-click on the panel across the bottom where the applets are.
Like the Windows Task Manager?
Like the Windows Task
Bar. Task Switcher, yeah, Task Bar, yeah.
If you right-click, there's a pop-up menu.
Yep, got it. Applets, I see it.
Okay. You should find Workplace Switcher in there.
I do, and it's locked.
Yes, but there is a little minus and plus button there. Do you see those?
Yes, down at the very bottom.
Okay. Select the Workplace Switcher, which means click on it once.
Yep.
Then click the... Now, don't do this. Listen to me first.
Okay.
Click once on Workplace Switcher, which selects it.
Yep.
Then hit the minus button, which will remove it. Then hit the plus button and add it back.
Okay. Hit the minus button. And then it doesn't do anything.
It should go away.
Well, the minus button is not really selected. The plus is. I can see it's not like it's not active. The X in the middle is out. A return and a star on the end, they're all active.
And you left-clicked once on the Workplace Switcher applet. Does it highlight it,
yes.
Nick?
Yeah, it should highlight.
It's highlighted. It's gray.
Right, and then the minus button doesn't... Try hitting the plus button.
Do you have to be admin or root?
I just hit the plus button.
The plus button.
And it selected it. Now I'm going to hit minus.
No, hold on. Stop.
Okay.
You hit plus, and what happened?
A check mark. And next to the icon for me.
Okay.
With a Workplace Switcher in gray.
Okay. Now, I can't remember in Linux Mint if there's a save button at the bottom there or an apply button.
No, there's a plus, minus, an X. It looks like a return. And then a cross, like a fat cross, starburst-like.
No, that's it. Yeah, okay. Okay, now close that window. And now try clicking on the Workplace Switcher again like you did before. Hello?
Yep, I'm scrolling back.
Nope. Close that window. So you're back at the desktop.
I closed it. And I went back to the task bar and open it back up again.
No. Close it.
Yep.
So you're at the desktop.
Yep.
Now with the little applet icon down in the corner for your desktop switcher, click on that again. The icon that didn't work before.
I don't have one.
It disappeared?
Something's wrong.
Yeah, so something is not right on your machine. All right, so...
And it's tough without seeing your screen.
I'm sorry, it is working.
Okay.
It's on the right side of my screen.
There you go.
My bar at the bottom.
So it's working now?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
You will.
There's so many features and options available that sometimes turning them on is tricky.
Yeah, yes, and the problem was that the desktop switcher was installed but not active.
Right.
And so in his case, removing it and adding it back again activated it.
Right. It's like going to the Windows program features. You can turn on and off things that
exactly.
are there but not running.
Exactly.
And in fact, that's one way to optimize and streamline your computer. Turn off stuff you're not using.
Right.
And it can make things run faster.
Right. Yeah. And that's a neat trick, by the way. If you go into, for example, your startup stuff, which you can go from settings, you can search for startup, and not start certain things.
Yeah, turn it off.
Like Teams or Microsoft Office or, you know, a bunch of other things. You'd be amazed at how much faster your computer will boot if you turn all that stuff off. Yeah.
Yeah, TSRs, terminate and stay resident.
Right, that's what they used to call them. Now they're just programs because everything is pretty much
yeah.
terminate and stay resident.
But the things that you can shut off in there is unbelievable because a lot of the programs think, oh, well, you want me all the time just sitting there waiting to see if you're going to use okay. me.
Yeah, every time you install a program, it assumes you're going to be using that one program always and forever.
Well, and Microsoft in particular
and
is bad
only.
At that because their system is so slow and unresponsive. The way they solve that is by loading everything up at startup.
Mm-hmm. Into memory, which is why you need more memory.
Which is yeah. why you need more memory and why startup takes so long.
Well, that's the other thing, though, when people install programs, again, getting click happy, a lot of them will sit there and say, do you want this also into your startup? And they just automatically click on it and say, yes. What you've just done is added that to the startup programs. Every time your computer starts up, it's going to load that, even though you might not use it for months.
Right.
Just what it is, but it's sitting there waiting for you, taking up resources.
Yep. You can do that with pretty much every operating system. There's stuff that loads in the background. And generally speaking, if you don't know what it does, don't touch it.
Yeah. When in doubt, leave it alone.
But, for example, if you never use Microsoft Teams, you can take it out of the start menu.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't use Microsoft Office, take it out of the start menu.
Well, it's not so much taking it out. I think you can just disable it.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
It puts it in there. So what you do is right-click on it, folks, because it'll sit there and say it's running. You right-click on it, and you can say disable it. So then that way, you know, it's because you don't want to delete the whole program if you're going to need it. But you can just turn it off so it's not constantly starting every time you start your computer.
Right. All right. Google has posted its changelog for the May 2026 security update, which is rolling out to Pixels ranging from the Pixel 7a to the Pixel 10 series. Google detailed a major fix for an issue that's plagued all of the devices eligible for this month's update. You'll find a fix for slow wireless charging speeds when the battery level is between 75% and 80%. This update also includes the Pixel tablet. It's rolling out slowly, so if you haven't got it yet, don't call us. Apple has agreed to pay $250 million, which is about $0.08 a person. Well, I'll get to that. $250 million to settle a class action lawsuit that accused it of misleading customers about the availability of its Apple Intelligence features, of which there are, wait, hold on, none. The proposed settlement would apply to people in the U.S. only who purchased all models of the iPhone 16 and the iPhone 15 Pro between June 10th of 2024 and March 29th of 2025. But don't go out and buy that Ferrari just yet. The people who submit qualifying claims can receive $25 for each eligible device, which may decrease or increase up to $95, depending on claim volume and other factors. Google has officially promoted Chrome 148 to the stable channel for Windows and Mac. This is one of the most security-intensive releases in the browser's recent history, packing 127 security fixes in a single update. Three carry a critical severity rating, over two dozen are rated high, and a significant number fall under medium and low categories. Google awarded more than $100,000 in bug bounties to external researchers for responsibly disclosing vulnerabilities, with a single researcher receiving $55,000. It's rolling out slowly, so keep watching the skies. Apple has removed more desktop Macs from its lineup, from its online store, as the global memory shortage continues. Mac Mini models with 32 gig and 64 gig of RAM are no longer available for purchase, nor is the M3 Ultra Mac Studio with 256 gig of RAM. Lame duck Apple CEO Cook, recently said that the Mac Mini and the Mac Studio are going to be hard to get for months to come. According to Cook, Apple underestimated the demand for the Mac Mini and the Mac Studio from customers looking for a machine to run AI and agentic tools locally. He said Apple also expects significantly higher memory costs in the months to come, so Apple is likely conserving supply by eliminating some configuration options. The 32-gig M4 Mac Mini is also no longer available. You may have intended to install an AI model on your computer, but you might have one anyway. Google Chrome has been quietly installing a 4-gigabyte model onto devices without asking or notifying people. Google has been installing Gemini Nano, an AI model that runs on devices such as smartphones and laptops instead of in the cloud, onto some people's Chrome browsers without their permission. And Google doesn't tell you that it's on your device after it's installed either. Gemini Nano will only be installed if the person's device meets the hardware requirements. It's unknown how many people have gotten the install. Gemini Nano performs tasks such as detecting scam phone calls, helping you write text messages, summarizing recordings, and analyzing Pixel phone screenshots. Chrome users will not know they have Gemini Nano unless they search for it. But you don't have to search for us. Just give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. So, yeah, what Google is saying is that they're putting Gemini Nano on people's machines because that's how they do scam prevention, right? So one of the things that your Google Chrome browser can do is detect scams and kill them. But the way it does that is just by using Google Nano in the background of your machine, which means it's using your battery, it's using your processor, it's using your memory, it's using your hard drive space. And 4 gig these days, honestly, is not a lot, and I get that, but it's still 4 gig on your machine. On my little 2-in-1 here, I've only got 64 gig, and Windows 11 already takes up a significant piece of that, so I have not loaded Chrome on this machine.
Chrome is already known as a memory hog, too.
You should probably turn on your...
I forgot. Yeah. Chrome is already known as a memory hog, too. So it's now they're going to load an AI into your computer.
Yeah. And it is only the 4-gig model. And I kind of understand why they're doing it.
Yeah.
We're certainly seeing massive costs associated with running AI. The heat alone the heat and the water usage is creating bad microclimates in places. So it's changing the climate of the areas that those data centers are in. That's true, and it's increasing global warming significantly, and Apple is, Google is trying to mitigate some of that, and one way to do that is by offloading what they can onto your system.
That goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Instead of one supercomputer, we've got 100 million little computers in a giant cluster.
Right. And so when it is something simple like, is this a scam, there's honestly no reason not to do it on your computer. So this is not necessarily a bad thing. And most people's machines these days, unless you're running a Celeron processor with only 4 gig of RAM, most machines these days are really not going to notice the extra space being taken up or the extra cycles being used up. So it's not as big a deal as it sounds. What's bad about this is that they don't tell you they're doing it.
Not like, even...
They just sneak it in the background.
Mm-hmm. In the tiny terms and conditions that everyone ignores?
Right. None of that. Right. And that just kind of makes people angry. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pete from Rochester, New York. What's up, Pete?
Close enough. It's Keith, but that's good. First, I want to say I appreciate your show. I listen to you guys as much as I can. I have two questions. One, your drive, your fund drive, I heard you say earlier that if you didn't reach your goal, are we still able to contribute? Because I find great value in your program.
Thank you so much. Yes, you are. Don't even continue. Let me get this out first. If you head on over to jazz901.org, you can hit that big red donate now button and scroll down, and you know, you can see all the various things that you can do, and somewhere in there you can check that this is for Sound Bites.
Okay, very good. All right, and my second question is, a few weeks back, towards the end of your show, one of your hosts was mentioning a program, a software program, And I think it was a budgeting program, and he mentioned that he had put it on his computer or his wife's computer. I wrote that information, wrote that name down somewhere, and now I can't find it.
Money Dance.
Say that again, please.
Money Dance.
Money Dance?
Money Dance.
Like taking a dance with your dollar bills.
Yep.
Yes, correct. Money Dance. Okay. Yep. I got it. Thank you so kindly. I appreciate you guys, and have a great day.
All right. You too, Keith. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Money Dance is a great program.
I think I find a way to convert my Mac Quicken, which doesn't import into Money Dance. If I convert it to Windows Quicken first,
there you go.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Then Money Dance will do it.
Yeah,
nice. And Money Dance, I've been using it for years, and it's an amazing little program. And it's only, you know, you get this version and the next version for, I think it's $30, $35, something along that line.
Yeah, it's. I forget what it is, but it's like, cheap. I mean,
it's not a subscription. You can pay a subscription if you always want to get the next version.
Well,
you don't have to pay a subscription.
They also, you get this version and the next version, and then if you want the version after that, you pay again.
And if you go into Money Dance, let me just clarify this too, is that if you want, say, they have additional services that you pay for to, say, like automatically download your balances from your bank, you can set that up. But again, they're very nominal fees for what they do. And this is a worldwide supported program. I mean, they're literally in all countries all over the place. And I had a question one time, well, a couple of them, how to do this or that. And I was amazed. It wasn't days getting back to me. It was just a few hours.
And it's available...
All platforms.
All platforms. I apologize. It's $65. I bought it so long ago. It
was
cheaper back then. $65 if you want the one-time purchase. If you're subscribing, it's $9 a month or $90 a year. And that gets you unlimited syncing to all the banks, the monthly subscription, unlimited syncing to like 11,000 North American banks.
Yeah.
So, you know, that...
I mean, if you're just doing basic Quicken for home expenses, you could probably buy just that one first copy and do you for the rest of your life.
Yep.
Because it's, you know, just the big, simple, you know, running a balance sheet or, you know, adding, subtracting, putting stuff in. You don't need other features, which they do offer for businesses. because you can also run a business off of the software.
And at that, $90 a year is not anything.
No, that's dirt cheap. And like I say, the response time when, you know, I had an issue. Unbelievable. It's like, oh, I was expecting you. All right, I wrote this, you know, one morning, one of them, and I thought, okay, they'll probably hear from them in a couple days. No biggie. I get that.
Yeah.
By lunchtime, all of a sudden, I had a reply. Oh, yeah, here's the thing, blah, blah, blah. Walked me through the whole thing. If you have further questions, let us know. We'd be happy to help you. Okay, I can deal with that.
I can deal with that. And you can try it for free, by the way. You're limited to the number of transactions.
I believe 30 transactions.
For, yeah, but for testing, that's more than enough.
Yeah, and I mean, you can set up a reminders in the calendar and automatic things. So say if you've got rent coming or your car payment or, you know, loans or whatever, it can sit there and remind you, oh, yeah, you got to put do this, do this, do this. And I, every morning, I'll sit there, open up Money Dance, and I open up my banking, and I can sit there and reconcile daily. And I'm always to the penny, which my late wife, God rest her soul, would probably roll over in her grave right now because the way I used to do finances.
I can't be out of money. I still have checks.
Yeah, and she was a CPA that she always found it offensive that I rounded, but I never bounced a check.
Right. If you round up, you've always got an extra few pennies.
Yeah, it worked for me.
Worked for you, and that's all that counts. But accountants don't round. All right, until you're talking billions. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on the truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Dun-dun-dun.
Okay. Roku. That wasn't for Roku. Roku and TCL are being sued in a class action lawsuit that claims software updates released by the companies have been repetitively defective, making TVs unusable.
Roku, where's Microsoft in this lawsuit?
Roku is most known for making a streaming stick devices, while TCL makes a variety of televisions. The two companies have a partnership where Roku's OS powers the smart capabilities of many affordable TVs. TCL is one of Roku's biggest customers. The complaint was filed in a federal court based out of Southern California, where the companies were accused of releasing software updates that caused the smart TVs to freeze, restart over and over, not turn on at all, or degrade the experience. You're right, it could have been Microsoft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roku has stated that they believe the claims are meritless. TCL has not commented. A severe security vulnerability affecting almost every version of Linux has caught defenders off guard and scrambling to patch after security researchers publicly released exploit code that allows attackers to take complete control of vulnerable systems. The bug, dubbed CopyFail, is now being exploited in the wild, meaning it's being actively used in malicious hacking campaigns. The CopyFail bug cannot be exploited over the internet on its own, but it can be weaponized if used in conjunction with an exploit that works over the internet. Per Microsoft, if the CopyFail bug is chained together with another vulnerability that can be delivered over the internet, an attacker could use that flaw to gain root access to an affected system. Linux companies are rushing patches. NVIDIA, home builder Pulte Group, and startup Span are partnering to install mini AI data centers on the outside walls of new homes across the U.S. Each unit, called an XFRA or XFRA node, mounts next to the HVAC and electrical equipment. instead of one massive centralized data center, the idea is to spread computing across thousands of homes with unused grid capacity.
Yeah, make the homeowners pay for the electricity and the cooling.
Exactly. Yeah. Span says it can deploy 8,000 nodes six times faster and at roughly one-fifth the cost of a 100-megawatt traditional data center. Homeowners get a smart panel, a backup battery, sometimes solar, and pay a flat fee for power and Wi-Fi while being compensated for the energy and bandwidth the node uses. So only you can decide if that's worth
your
while.
Effort. Yeah.
Also, I suspect that you won't ever have to heat your home again. Pennsylvania has sued the maker of Character.ai, alleging that it violated state law by presenting an AI chatbot character as a licensed doctor. The lawsuit was filed in state court by the Pennsylvania Department of State and the Pennsylvania Department of State and State Board of Medicine. A Character.ai spokesrobot, who may or may not be an AI, declined to comment on the lawsuit but said that the user-created characters on our site are fictional and intended for entertainment and role-playing. We have taken robust steps to make that clear. The Pennsylvania lawsuit says a chatbot character called Emily, E-M-I-L-I-E, is presented as a psychiatrist and claims to be a licensed medical doctor. As of April 17, 2026, there have been approximately 40,500 user interactions with Emily on the Character.ai platform, the lawsuit said. We're not doctors. We don't even play them on television anymore, but you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415.
So isn't the first chatbot was, Eliza?
Eliza.
And how do you feel about that?
That's a Rogerian. Rogerian. Yeah. Those are actually, yeah. Here's the thing. There are a whole lot of people nowadays who are getting their diagnoses from AI. This is very dangerous.
It's scary.
Remember, AIs lie. Excuse me, hallucinate. And all of their information comes from the web, which we know is not reliable.
How many people have become hypochondriacs by looking up every little disease on
the
web?
Yeah.
And now to have an authority figure confirm your...
There was a time that WebMD, every answer was it's cancer. Every single answer. I've got... My thumbnail hurts. Oh, it's cancer. Excuse me. Probably not. It's probably the broken nail I can see right here.
Well, it's all self-diagnosing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I got that. You could talk yourself into it.
Yep. Hypochondria.
Yeah.
I don't watch doctor shows for that very reason. But, yeah, there's just...
Look. I thought it was always sarcoidosis.
Yeah. Isn't that cancer? Isn't everything cancer?
Yeah.
If you don't know what something means, it's probably people think it's cancer.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Could be.
Could be. Don't take your advice from some sort of AI. Go to an actual professional. Of course, the problem now is half the people who are learning to become doctors, training to become doctors, are doing all their tests via AI.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure how reliable our doctors are going to be in the future.
And so many people have lost their health care that you don't go to the doctor unless you're dying because
right.
you can't afford the bill you're going to get.
Or you have symptoms and you want to try again. Self-diagnose yourself.
Yep.
Well, it's doing this and this, and oh, yeah, it's kind of red and puffy, and it only hurts us. And I put those descriptions in, and AI stupidly will go out there and try to make an assumption of what you got, and, huh?
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Tom?
Hi, guys. I'm having a problem here with trying to get rid of a program on my computer.
Yeah?
It's PDF Suite 20. I'm using Revo Uninstall.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seems to be working fine.
Okay.
But the program won't go away. I delete so many files, but the program is still there.
there may be something else that came along with it that keeps reinstalling it. That often happens with malicious programs.
It says that it was three programs together, and I've tried doing one of them individually, and it seems to get rid of them, but it's always back again.
Maybe you got to do them in a different order.
What's the name of the program?
PDF Suite 20.
Suite 20. Okay, that's different.
And it once it deletes, you know, it says it removes it. It has you restart the computer.
No, I haven't done that yet.
That you might want to do because it still could be in memory. Because quite often those PDFs do what we call a TSR, where they terminate and stay resident in the startup folder.
Oh, okay.
There's also PDF Suite has its own removal tool, which may be required.
And there's also PDF hyphen Suite appears to be legitimate. PDF Suite appears to be a scam.
Okay. So, but if you go into your under apps, right, in the Windows settings, if you go to where you would normally, instead of using Revo on installer, if you go into apps and try to find PDF Suite removal tool.
Okay.
Try that instead.
All right, I'll give that a shot. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate
Good luck.
It. Thank you.
Yeah, another one of those scam programs that takes a name very, very similar to a real program.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm loving Guardio. You know, because of the scammed fake AI generated ads in that. With this, I found out that you can get it for free if you're putting it on just one computer. You can sit there and have it on there. And so any of the surfing that I do with the Windows machine that I have, I've got it on that one, which I use for free. And the minute I click on something, it comes back and says, nope, this is a scam. Don't do it. Shut it down, and you go. Because, like I say, we've said before, there are so many people out there that can make a website look so authentic, you would swear up and down your firstborn and everything else that it was legit, and it's nothing but a scam. And that's what they're striving to do.
Yep, and there's also one called WOT, or Web of Trust.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a Chrome extension.
Okay.
That is useful for that.
Anything you can do to protect yourself, because just like viruses and that we were talking back in the day, how it was a game of leapfrog. You know, you get an update, and it'd be protected for a couple weeks, and then they'd jump over that and come out with a different one, and you'd have to go leapfrogging over that. This is the same type of thing. You've got to constantly stay up to date and check your machines because they're always going to try other ways around getting into your machine, because especially now if they can steal information. Like I say, viruses are still out there. They live on the web, and they'll be there until we all die.
Right.
But the new scam is these people that are going out there creating these fake ads or doing just trying to write spyware and malware. That's why we push that, to steal your information, even if it's just your list of all the folks, your contacts. They can turn around. If they get that list and you've got, say, a couple hundred people in your email list, now they could turn around and sell that to a spammer to make money. And that's where they're trying to do now, is just make more money.
Mm-hmm.
They found this gig that they can do it and sit back and have a machine just go out there and siphon and try to infect people's machines by the millions.
Used to be bragging rights. You know, I put Killware was here on somebody's website.
Yeah.
Right. Now we're trying to steal your money. And if I can get $10 from you, that's $10 I didn't have before.
That's exactly
right. So don't think that just because you don't have any money that you're not a target.
Oh, heck, $10, $1. If you get $1.
That's even a buck you didn't have.
A dollar you didn't have. But if you do that a million times.
That's right. My wife is a financial services representative in a bank. And every day, people come in. I talk to somebody, and they wiped out my account. What can I do? Well, not much now.
Yeah, it's gone.
That's just, you know, it's you need to talk to the police, not to us. But it breaks her heart. I mean, these are, you know, it's across all education lines, across ages, across everything. There's no, you know, you think to yourself, oh, it's old people. Yes, but it's also young people.
Mm-hmm.
It's college educated people. It's people who didn't finish high school. It's everybody.
Troy Hunt, who runs Have I Been Pwned, got pwned.
Yep. And there's a million ways to do it. I've said this before. I was sitting on the couch watching a movie. I got a phone call. Somebody was calling because my daughter was in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to run out and get gift cards and read them the numbers so that they could get her out of jail. Well, first,
To pay the bail.
First, I don't know of a single jail in the world that takes gift cards. Secondly, my daughter was sitting on the couch next to me.
It was your other daughter.
My favorite daughter was not there. Yeah. But you know, these. I mean, they sounded. They knew her name.
Mm-hmm.
They knew everything. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So much information has been leaked that the bad guys can get your name from one leak. They get your phone number from another leak. Get your social security number from another leak. The minimum they do is fill out a credit application in your name and put down their address or a PO box they rented so to help hide their identity.
Yeah.
But if they can call you up. Or it's almost funny, and we almost admire them. Bad guys decided they can buy an ad on a website that says you have a virus and call this phone number. So they buy an ad and they hire a call center. They don't have to do any work themselves.
That's exactly right.
Bad guys are pretty lazy in general.
And there are call centers all over the world.
Yeah.
Who are just waiting to answer the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hope that they don't realize it's a scam. Because they have a script. If you get this message, it means this. If you get this message, it means this. You must have a virus. Download this software.
This phone number is this thing.
Yep.
There's this guy I follow on Facebook. He's a scam buster. And he,
there's a YouTube guy, too, yeah.
Yeah, he is a YouTube guy. And he goes down there, and he's got this new bit now where they get in there and... He's first leading them on.
Yeah, while they're breaking into your computer to steal your stuff, he breaks into their computer.
Right. And he strings them along now because they go out there and have them get all these credit, you know, gift cards and put it in there. And he frustrates the hell out of them because they're supposed to, you know, just put them all in and then they're going to say, route them to them. But he hits the accept button. And these people overseas go so ballistic, it's unbelievable. It's like they're taking the phone and banging it on the counter.
What do you mean you hit cancel? I told you hit okay. Which tech support people run into all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So the cherry on top, though, is he goes, then he'll change his voice. He goes, I told you not to get very belligerent with me. Now I'm deleting your computer. And like Steve was saying, while he's doing all this playing around, they're sneaking in the back door. They set it up, copy all their files, and then they go in there and because they get them so angry and they go, well, now you can't use your computer anymore. Boop, they hit one button. It wipes out their computer that it puts it in an endless cycle and they can't get any of their stuff. Oh, it was so entertaining. You know, just to be a... You can hear from
Bezos. I've also seen him break into their camera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they do that a lot.
So say, are you talking to the guy behind you in the red shirt?
Or he'll talk to the girls.
Right.
And they look, and they're amazed because he's calling the one girl, and he goes, yeah, you're sitting right next to her. And you see the look on her face. Wow.
It's 25 years ago, we had the adventures of Wendy Wilcox and her dog Willis, one of the first scammers that went back, you know, a lot of the early Nigerian money scams. you know, where they want you. You won $10 million. Just send us $10,000. You know, finance fee to do it. And because you know what the guy says, when I scam money out of people, I usually take 30%. You know.
Right,
and they got the people to go into internet cafes and wait for them in front of the camera so they can see. It's just amazing, and it's been 25 years already. That they just do a new twist and all that. Marriage proposals.
Well, like I said, my late brother-in-law, he got scammed by that type of thing, a marriage proposal, and I'm sending this girl money so she can come and visit me and.
I had some woman reach out to me on Facebook. You look like a nice man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I get that regularly. Oh, I'm an old guy with a beard.
Yeah.
I must be stupid.
Yeah. That was
But I strung her along for a while. I said, thank you. Send me a picture. Sure, she sent me a picture. I said, well, that's nice. Send me another picture. She sent me another picture. And then she said, you know, my birthday's coming up. I said, okay, thanks. So who should I send the present to? And she said, she sent me a post office box overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's interesting because I looked up your picture on the internet and it says you're actually such and so in Akron, Ohio. And here's three or four pictures of you. In Akron, Ohio. So which one do I send it to? Never heard from her again.
That was a plot.
Her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a plot point on one of the cop shows I was watching last week that this Russian woman was in a bar at lunchtime trying to find a husband because her visa was expiring.
Oh, yeah.
And the one thing they kept making fun of her for was, at lunchtime, you're going to find a husband?
Hey, they only gave her an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
Remember, folks, most of the women you meet on the internet look like me.
Mm-hmm.
That's simply the fact. There's a whole lot of... there's just a whole lot of scamming going on, and you have to be way more careful.
If only they'd use their powers for good.
Yeah, too bad they don't.
Or only if everyone knew Jason Statham.
Yeah, right.
Well, like you say,
they're making a new one, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
A couple times where I used to work, I had people come in a couple times and wanted to get the gift cards. And we had to ask.
Yep.
And they'd say, oh, no, this is for a birthday. I did have one that was they told me I had to go get. I said, no. No, ma'am.
Yep. And, a lot of the gift card kiosks are now putting big signs up like that, too.
So I had our security guy have her come up, and they took her to the back and explained what was going on and everything else. And I don't know whether they worked up a case or not.
They're on the phone with them. Okay, mm-hmm. Go to the store, and I pick them out. Yep. Okay, right there, read them to me.
Yep. Yeah. And we had one customer that got caught by that. They made her get like one or two gift cards and go through the line and then go back in the store, get a couple more, go through a different line.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because the stores are being trained to ask people, you know, like they've said, you know, is this real or not?
Well, wouldn't you say, why are we going through all these shenanigans? Apparently not. No.
Well, they keep you panicked. And so, that's one of the things we say is the more dire. Message looks, we're going to delete all your photos in 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The more dire it is, the more fake it is.
Yeah.
Really? You're going to delete all my photos, including all my offline backups?
Yeah.
I don't think you are. No.
Well, again, a lot of what they're prying on is ignorance.
We turned your camera on, and you should be ashamed of the stuff you're doing.
That people don't realize that this is happening and it can be stopped, or the best way to do is just hang up.
Yep.
Or if they see this screen all of a sudden come on their computer and it says, you've been hacked, they panic, call this number. No, first thing you do is pull the plug on it.
Yeah.
Plug it back in. I guarantee you, 99% of the time, it was a scam anyways.
Because most people are nice, and... You expect other people to be nice.
It's nice to be nice.
And so
all those LO people know that sign.
Yeah. And so, you know, having someone tell you you've got a virus and they're trying to help you, well, thank you. That's nice. That's very nice
that's
of you.
That's a very nice thing. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had one that said, we are watching you look at porn.
Yeah. Or worse.
A, I'm not looking at porn.
Yeah.
B, this computer doesn't have a camera on it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what you think you're watching, but it's not me.
Yeah, I do like the ones where they string the guy along so he won't be able to attack somebody else. But
right.
You play dumb when you know, can go to your Windows icon. What's a Windows icon? Yeah.
Right.
Down at the bottom of the screen. Bottom of my screen, that's my keyboard, yeah.
I know. But you know what? That's a public service.
Yeah.
The longer you can keep them on with you, the less they're harming somebody else. So
does your mother know what you're doing? She's in the next cubicle over.
Yeah, and that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I worked with a company that had a legitimate call center overseas. And, you know, the only time that call center was quiet was when they had a hurricane. And the whole call center got wiped out. They had to go somewhere else. But they're manned 24/7, and that was a legitimate one.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it happens. All right, listen, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who pledged. Again, we didn't make our goal, and the pledge drive is over, but you can still pledge at jazz901.org. Hit that big red Donate Now button. Let us get a little closer to our goal. So thanks to each and every one of you. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you, for pity's sake?